Welcome to the Secrets of High Demand Coaches podcast, where I interview some of the best coaches in the business to find their secrets and share them with the world. I'm Scott Rittheimer, founder and CEO of Scale Architects, and we help founders and leaders find the right coach at the right time so they can achieve the predictable success they deserve. And a huge part of that is helping great coaches do great work that creates enormous demand for their services with way less effort. If you're a high demand coach, I'd absolutely love to share your story and expertise as well. So stick around to the end of the show and we'll reveal how you can be our next guest in 15 to 20 minutes. Let's go. Hello, hello, and welcome. Welcome once again to the Secrets of the High Demand Coach. And I have a real treat with for you today. That is the one, the only, Jim Verquist. Now, before launching three Silicon Valley startups, Jim served 4 years in the U.S. Marine Corps. He also went on to earn his MBA and went to work for big corporate as well. Now, he led a turnaround at Millennium and a fast strategy transformation at Best Doctors. And now he's launched a very exciting new firm called Engine 2 Innovation for businesses that need a second growth engine. His firm uses the corporate rebel model because corporate rebels have created more billion-dollar breakthroughs than Bell Labs and Xerox PARC combined. And those are very, very innovative departments. I can't wait to hear more about that. So, Jim, welcome to the show. Excited to have you here. Before we get into that, I'd love for you to unpack this background. You've got a very cool mix of different environments. How does that all come together to lead you to make the leap to starting Engine 2 Innovation?
Well, thank you, Scott. Yes, it's a fun background. And, like you said, I did 4 years in the U.S. Marine Corps. I did some pretty cool things there, but the most important thing the Marine Corps taught me is how I don't want to work and live my life. Like, I don't want to be a, yes, sir, right away, sir, don't think, just do type of person. So startups were a much more natural fit for me. As you said, I did three Silicon Valley startups. I wasn't the founders, but I was, number 7 employee at Digital Think, which went public, number 10 employee at GeForce, which was bought by Docent. So I did some really cool, and you really saw how innovation and why startups are so nimble and innovative, right? Like, they do things differently. Then what happened is I went to, got an MBA and went to work in big companies. And like, the culture shock of going from a 10-person startup to a big company is like far worse than the culture shock I experienced when I moved from America to Japan for 3.5 years. Like, that was nothing, wow. Right? And I've always rejected the idea that it has to be that way. And so you could go back to startups and do all kinds of cool, innovative things, which is a blast. And I recommend everybody do it. But startups know how to innovate. Like, and the big challenges, the big problems that we need to solve are inside of big companies. And so I've really focused on how do you go into big companies and bring in that same type of entrepreneurial energy where it's not just one or two people using the big brains to make change and innovation happen, but get everybody involved in that. Yeah. And so that's what I do.
I love it. So this is something we actually spent a lot of time on at Scale Architects, and the predictable success model is something that happens when you're coming out of predictable success into this stage we call treadmill, right? We figured out how to do business, we do more, rinse and repeat, right? Strategic planning is do 10% more of last year. And we start to rewrite the script of what made us successful, and we think it's strategic planning and budgeting and operations and policies and processes and checklists, while they have their role. And I really like your take on this from the website, but why is it that successful companies at some point start to lose their mojo?
Yeah, I think that's the key, right? So let's go back to what is a startup, because, a lot of your listeners are actually founders, but, over time you kind of almost like lose something and you're not always exactly sure what happened, right? I mean, you did all the right things, you grew like crazy, and now you're reaching the top of the S-curve and it's like, now it's starting to hit you. Like, we don't innovate the way that we used to, And so I think it's good back to rewind and say, okay, what is it exactly? What is this secret sauce that startups have that somehow established companies don't? Well, it starts with, what is a startup? Okay. I love Steve Blank's definition of a startup. A startup is a search for a scalable and repeatable business model. And so, you know, startups are all about, early stage startups are all about rapidly exploring and exploiting an unknown opportunity space. Like, you don't know exactly where you're going. You don't know how to get there. So everybody in the company is using the big brains to kind of figure it out, right? And you pivot and you do all kinds of, you try all kinds of crazy things, all kinds of duplicated work, because one person's trying one thing and another person says, I think there's a better idea. You don't argue or arm wrestle about it. You just go try this other approach, right? You experiment with ideas. And maybe your idea works better. Maybe their idea works better. Maybe they combine in all kinds of interesting and unexpected ways. What happens, though, is that eventually, hopefully, the startup becomes successful and you get into the scaling phase. That's all kinds of fun, right? But the focus shifts now. It's no longer about a search for a repeatable and scalable business model. It's all about the reliable and efficient execution of that proven business model. And that is absolutely 100% necessary. The last thing you want to do is every time you go into a business or try to do something with a business that you're confronted with a completely different thing, right? Like if I go into McDonald's, I kind of want the hamburger to taste exactly the same way that I fell in love with 50 years ago or whatever, right? Like you want that kind of that same experience. You need that. It turns out bureaucracy is wonderful at doing it. In fact, we haven't invented a better way of actually doing reliable, efficient execution of a proven business model than bureaucracy. Bureaucracy isn't the problem. The problem is that we've lost the second channel of innovation that startups have. And what happens is that, in just a minute, I'll kind of explain what these two channels are. But really what happens is that, established companies shut down the channel two of innovation, which is the bottom-up stuff. And all the change innovation becomes top-down. Any bottom-up innovation, when they talk about bottom-up innovation, it's like, step one, get permission. All these things that block and tackle every single big idea, and they make sure that only the most mediocre, sustaining-looking innovations kind of make it through, and anything that has big potential is shut down immediately. And that's what I'd like to change.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the interesting things I've seen that I think contributes to this is that bottom-up innovation is almost, there is no top and bottom in startups. There's just so many people. It's all hands on deck all the time that it's just like this kind of amoebic core, if you will, that's moving. And many times the founder or founding team is an essential part of that. And because the founders are so close to the ground level, it doesn't necessarily matter if it's top up or top down. And the pattern that I've seen as you're adding the bureaucracy in to create the scalability is that innovative team gets smaller and smaller, right?
Yes.
It stays centralized in one or two people. What are some steps that you can take to kind of break that cycle to get back to bottom up, but to really, for lack of a better term, democratize innovation inside of an organization?
Yeah. So let's go back and just kind of look at how startups actually do innovate, because it's, as you said, it's very kind of organic and it happens from every place. And one thing that's really cool about working at the startups that are good, like the startups that get it, right? I mean, the founders are too busy to manage people. I mean, they are busy solving challenging, interesting problems, and they give general direction. So this is these two channels of innovation that you find in startups is that, there's the first channel is official projects. So this is kind of the official, this is where we're going. It's guided by big picture thinking. It's not a detailed plan like you find in big companies, with plenty of room for creative problem solving. They have that, right? That's probably 60, 70, 80% of what happens inside of startups.
Yeah.
Very important. Good stuff. Managers need to kind of have a vision and try to get people aligned with that vision, right? That's important. But they also have this second channel of innovation, which I call unofficial skunkworks projects. And this is where all the, all the innovative activity that fills in all the holes and creates surprises and takes you in places that nobody ever expects. This is where that happens. And how it works is that employees explore their own big ideas kind of alongside of what they're officially responsible for, right? Like I'm in charge of this and I'm kind of doing that. But alongside that, I'm actually working on this other project, exploring this other idea that I'm not ready to openly share with anybody inside the company, right? Like, I'm not knocking on my manager's door, the founder's door, and say, hey, you know, what do you think of this idea? No, you just explore that idea. And they're not officially sanctioned. And again, the startup founders are so busy that they're actually not paying attention to it. And they actually want, you know, when you go into a big 10-person startup, you've got 10 people using their big brains to do what they think is right. You can't tightly manage that, right?
Right.
You go into a 1,000-person company, you've got one, two, maybe three people at most using their big brains, and everybody else is supposed to be kind of just doing what they're told. And so that's the second channel of innovation that gets lost along the way. And everything becomes tight, top down, tightly controlled. As you said, okay, now we've got to go create this new growth engine, and we've got to create, you know, we're reaching the top of the business. We've got to do something new, but we've got to keep employees focused on what they do, because, you know, that's how we pay the paychecks, right?
Yeah.
We get a select group of people that is supposed to go out and create the next thing. I haven't found a single example of inside an established company where some innovation team or some visionary kind of project leader comes along and they, let's go create the next breakthrough, and they actually go create the next breakthrough. They do lots of cool projects. If you listen to innovation podcasts, read innovation books, they're mainly about lots of cool projects. Well, what happened 2 years later? Oh, well, they were shut down because it didn't quite work out, or, you know, management didn't get it, or, you know, the company stuck in the south. There's always an excuse. Meanwhile, when you go back and look into big companies do occasionally create big breakthroughs, right? And looking at where the billion-dollar breakthroughs come from is very instructive. The Sony PlayStation, the Xerox laser printer, BlackBerry Messenger, LED lighting, all these things came, billion-dollar breakthroughs inside established companies. They came from corporate rebels, which is people who, regular employees, not the select superstars, but the regular employees who actually do channel 2 innovation, even though they're not supposed to. And they normally get harassed and bad performance reviews and threatened to be fired. And they are so committed to doing it, they're not rogues. Corporate rebel are not rogues that are trying to get fired. They're not trying to destroy their company. What's funny is that they're the hardest working people in the entire company. Like, they are taking all of their work that, you know, everyone is spending 40 hours to do something that they could do in 30 hours, right? And we're very good at doing that. The corporate rebels are like, I don't have time for that because I don't want slack time. I want time to work on an unofficial Skunkworks project.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to do my 40 hours of work in 30 hours. Can't do that every week, right? Sometimes there's crunch weeks and just crazy weeks. And, you know, so that week I can't work on my project at all. But if you can get your work done in 30 hours by restructuring, being more efficient, whatever, not screwing around, then I've got 10 hours that week to work on something. And they work on this unofficial Skunkworks project. They don't announce it. They don't broadcast it. They don't go around and saying, you guys are idiots and I'm going to prove you wrong, or I'm going to destroy the. It's not about that. It's the goal is always, how do I get this project far enough along so that other people inside the company can see what I see? Because the big ideas sound crazy. The breakthroughs always sound crazy until someone proves that they work, right? As Einstein said, if at first the idea is not absurd, there is no hope for it. This is where the breakthroughs come from. They come from the people in places that nobody is paying attention to, right? I like to say that you can learn more about innovation by watching Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz than you can by reading 90% of the books on innovation out there, because it's from the people that you just aren't really paying attention. They're great employees, but it's like, the manager sees them, it's like, you stop screwing around and get back to work. And it's like, that's exactly what startups don't do. And we need to get, if you want to create a new growth engine, you've got to get this channel 2 innovation back online. If you want to just do sustaining innovations and ho-hum next things, then your top-down approaches work perfectly.
Yeah. I want to go back to a point that you made earlier, because I think it's really, really important. And that is that bureaucracy isn't the problem. The problem is that we haven't decentralized innovation alongside bureaucracy. So how do you get both of those working simultaneously? Because one's job is to protect and be efficient and reliable. The others is to kind of explode and try and innovate and change. How do you get those from running side by side? And why do companies rarely achieve that?
It's a great question, and it's one of the hard things to kind of understand. And one of the things is just so surprising. I mean, until you've actually experienced these projects, they're really hard to understand. And so the first thing to think about is that innovation happens where the work happens. And so who's best to see the problems and opportunities inside of your company? Well, it's your regular employees, right? Not the people off on some, you know, where all the ping pong tables and beanbags are, the innovation team, right? It's not at the top of the mountain where brilliant ideas look brilliant up top, but down below, they're like, oh, gee, this is never going to work, right?
Right.
And so the problem is that in an established company, you've got managers who manage and you've got a bureaucracy, and all of that is very important. And so what has proven to happen to work, because this model has taken off, like you can go inside an established company and you can get 10-20% of your employees doing this stuff. Right now, in nature, naturally, there's not more than 1,000 employees that's a Gary Claussen or one of these corporate rebels who's literally willing to risk their careers, risk their jobs to do what they think is right for the company. Most people are like, okay, you want to call all the shots? You know, I'm crossing my fingers, but I'm not very hopeful, right?
Yeah.
And so the problem is that managers cannot be two people at once. If you're a manager and you see an employee working on something you think is crazy, you can't hide your kind of disdain for that idea. You can't hide your frustration with, you know, why in the world would we ever put a laser inside an office machine? That makes no sense. Like, you know, I want you to be innovative, but come on, like, do not just do stupid, idiotic things. And then Gary Starkweather proves it works, and it becomes one of the biggest breakthroughs of any product we've ever had in America, right? So the way that it works is, and what we do at Intune Innovation, is come in with we launch what's called a Skunkworks program for corporate rebels. And it's really three easy components that honestly doesn't change anything inside of your company about how it works, or what managers do, or how much time employees spend working on their regular work. Mm. It's, you need three things. First, you need the executive at the top of the hierarchy to say, we want this to happen. Like, we want to actually have this kind of engine two, channel two innovation going. And so we're going to explicitly allow it. Second, you need a catalyst, somebody that is outside of management to actually be the person that is providing dedicated support. It's almost like employees and all of us, we kind of need permission to do things. And the problem is we can't get it from managers. And if we do, it's going to come out across with all kinds of baggage and constraints and things that we don't want to kind of burden our young, fragile idea with, right?
Yeah.
And so the catalyst is that person. They're there at the invitation of the top executive. So it's not like, you know, this is a rogue movement or something like that. It's official. Officially unofficial, right? And then, so you need that because employees need somebody that can kind of protect them. You know, the thing with the catalog, the thing with the way these works is that as long as you don't create risk for the company and you do not let it interfere with your assigned duties, you can work on any big idea you want for the company. They're self-regulating because employees are not trying to get fired. They're not trying to blow things up. They're trying to get it far enough along to eventually win official approval for this. So you don't need to worry about, why are you working on something? No, I'm not going to just waste I'm not going to work my butt off. I'm working, you know, I'm like the hardest working employee in the company, pretty much. I'm not going to do that just so that I can kind of waste time and eventually be denied. I want to eventually get this approved. And so the third and most important feature of this really is that managers have one new rule, which is that you cannot kill projects. This isn't Google's 20% time. Google's 20% time was a complete failure. Why? Because managers could kill ideas that they didn't like, right? And employees actually knew that if you're my manager, I probably better not work on something that is going to kind of cause you angst and anxiety, because you're the one that decides if I should get promoted or not. You're the one that decides if I could get rewarded. If I look like an idiot in front of you, I'm kind of toast. So I'm just going to play it safe and I'll do, you know, Google's 20% time, did all kinds of good sustaining things. They didn't create the next big thing. So those are the three elements you need. And the goal is you're not getting everybody to be an innovator. You don't, in a side, an established company, you don't need, it's not a 10-person startup where you've got lots of people that can focus on reliable, efficient execution of the premise. That's awesome, right? But you can't predict who these people are going to be. So you basically open it up, people opt in. The goal is you get 10 to 20% of your employees doing that. Once you do that, it becomes a totally embedded part of the culture. You don't need a catalyst anymore because you've got catalysts all over the place.
Yeah.
And that's how it works.
That's fantastic.
I love it. All right. So here's a question I like to ask all my guests, and it's this. What would you say is the biggest secret you wish wasn't the secret at all? What's that one thing that you wish everybody listening, particularly those that are leading organizations in this place, what do you wish that they understood?
I wish they understood white space, because this happens in the white space of work, and this is something that managers tend to be very uncomfortable with. We always tend to think that our teams are operating at 100% efficiency. The reality is that if you have schedules and deadlines, you've got white space. Managers can't see it. It's like watching our kids do homework, right? They're sitting at the computer for 6 hours. You're like, I know that if they just sat down and buckled down, they could get this done in an hour or two, right? But they're, why do that when, mom and dad may ask them to clean the room, right? It's like, I would rather just sit in front of the computer, and sometimes I'm working and sometimes I'm not. And, mom and dad have no idea. If we go in and try to micromanage it, we actually cause more problems. Now they're going to spend 10 hours instead of six or eight. So white space is hard to understand in a lot of ways, but it's also actually very easy to understand. Most of us understand that, look, when I'm an employee and I've got the work that I need to do, no matter how it's assigned to me, most weeks I don't work flat out, all out, as hard and as efficiently as I could to get it done as fast as possible, because that would actually burn me out pretty quickly, right? Like, this type of work is kind of draining. And so at least if I embed, even if I'm embedding Slack time into my, I could do it in 30, but I do it in 40 because that's how many hours I'm supposed to be at work. That is somehow kind of, it kind of nourishes the soul. And so, there are weeks where there's no slack time at all, right? There are weeks where you have to work flat out just to get everything done. There's the crunch weeks where you've got to work, 48 hours that week. You've got to work 10-hour days just to get everything done. That sucks, but you're willing to do that. We're never rewarded with the idea that if you actually want to do your 40 hours of work and 30 hours this week because it's possible, you don't have to just pretend you're busy and, do things three times when you could do it once the right way. We no longer have to pretend. Now we've got a second channel of innovation that lets us work on these unofficial Skunk Works projects. The only exceptions where you don't really see this are in companies where they have this 10-second channel of innovation. If I can take on extra work and it's going to earn me a promotion, it's going to... It's going to create a new opportunity for me. It's going to make me rich, or it is just so challenging and exciting that I just have to do it. Which you find in early stage startups, right? You people are more likely to say, I'm going to get this done as fast as I can because, not every minute of work is fun, even in a startup, right? But this stuff totally nourishes the soul. It's like plugging into a super juiced, outlet. It's like, whoa, this is energizing. You can do that inside established companies, but you can't have managers try to figure out what's going to make me energized and excited, what project I'm going to love. You've got to let them figure it out for themselves. So if managers could understand white space and how it works and get comfortable with the idea that actually most employees want to solve challenging problems and make a difference in the world, they're not raped, they're not trying to screw around, that would change everything.
Wow. Yeah, I would second that. One of the things I've been seeing a lot is this kind of culture of busyness that almost says white space is bad, right? If you have it, fill it, and it just doesn't leave the margin to think like you're talking about here. So I love it. It's a fantastic concept for anyone who's looking to really scale innovation. It's absolutely the way to do it. On that note, where can folks who are saying, yes, this is what we need, where can they find out more about you and your work?
Well, you can look at Engine 2 Innovation. Website is engine2.us. And I'm also easy to find. My name is Jim Verquist. I think I'm the only Jim Verquist on the planet. So LinkedIn, is a good way to find me, and I'm here.
Fantastic. Well, Jim, thanks so much for being here. Fascinating conversation. I love the idea of engaging and liberating our corporate rebels. And I think you're right. We can't afford to leave it to the startups. We have to do it in larger organizations as well. So thanks so much for being here. For everyone watching, listening, you know your time and attention mean the world to us. I hope you got as much out of this conversation as I know I did. And I cannot wait to see you next time. Take care. Scott Ritzheimer here. Thank you so much for listening to the Secrets of High Demand Coaches podcast. If you are a successful coach, consultant, or advisor who's built a strong book of business and would like to be on the program, please visit go.scalearchitects.com. And if you got something out of this interview, would you share this episode on social media and just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials? If you know someone who'd be a great guest, you can tag them on social media to let them know about the show. And make sure you include the hashtag #HighDemandCoaching. I love seeing your posts. I love seeing your guest suggestions. Thank you so much. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any of those episodes, go ahead and subscribe now. Your thumbs up, your ratings, your reviews, they go a long way to help us promote the show, and they mean a lot to me and my team. If you want to know more, you can go to our website, www.scalearchitects.com, or you can follow me or the company on LinkedIn, Facebook, or Instagram. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.